Welcome to the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of the world's best resource for hockey strength and conditioning information. HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com.
Hey guys, welcome to episode 74 of the Hockey Strength Podcast. My name is Brian Sippets. I'm your host here today. Of course, the Hockey Strength Podcast is the official podcast of HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com, the world's best resource for training hockey players. Now, we do have some changes going on with the site, and I will get into that probably in our own separate podcast episode. Just kind of we'll do a 74.5, but do want to let you know that there are some changes coming down the pipe. I apologize, it has been a while since I've gotten a podcast up, and it has something to do with the changes that are going on. So regardless, we have coming up here an awesome conversation with Doug Crashley of Crash Conditioning in Calgary, Alberta. And we're talking a little bit about, you know, being a hockey guy, being in the hockey strength and conditioning business, for one, some of the downfalls of that, some of the benefits of that, but mostly talking about, you know, what do you do in the off season? And so we have a really nice chat with Crash here, and so good we went probably double the length that I usually try to go, but lots to talk about here, and I guess this is where my brain is at the current moment. But anyone who's listening who, you know, maybe you're looking to develop a business for yourself or even just a brand for yourself, this can be a really beneficial listen for you. So without further ado, let's go ahead and get on the phone with Doug Crashley in Calgary, Alberta. All right. Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 74 of the Hockey Strength Podcast. The Hockey Strength Podcast is the official podcast of HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com. We are the best resource for training hockey players, no matter what level you're training. If you have youth, high school age, junior, collegiate, or pro players, this is the place that you're going to find thousands of, we're over 1,000 now, articles, podcasts, programs, videos, anything you need to improve your skills as a coach, training hockey players. We've got it at HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com. Today, on the show with us, we have, this is the second time Crash has been on with us. We have Doug Crashley, who is, I guess, founder and coach and mentor at Crash Conditioning in Calgary, Alberta, second location in Lloydminster. And so Crash is doing some amazing things out there, has a huge hockey population. And in fact, today what we're going to talk about is what do you do in the off season if you are quote unquote a hockey business. So Crash, thanks so much for coming on today.
No, thank you for having me. I'm looking forward to chatting about this, and I'm still learning, so it's a good time for me to throw some stuff out there, but maybe I might figure something out along the way too.
Yeah, and you know, selfishly, that's sort of where I'm going with this too. And I think a lot of the people listening are in a situation. We have a lot of young strength coaches who are, maybe they are part of a private facility. Maybe they are looking to branch out on their own. They might be hockey focused. They might just work with a few hockey players. But you know, I think there's so many places that, you know, their niche is hockey, right? And so what happens, and what we see time and time again, is you get people that just get crushed in the summer, and you know, you work long hours. It's pretty exhausting work. But you make your money in the summer, and then, you know, you might have the odd team in here and there, depending on your setting or your situation. But then during the year, you know, you see people like mass exodus out of the gym, and you're just hoping and praying for next spring and summer so you can make your money again. So I want to just chat a little bit with you, because, you know, you're somebody who's done it. You're there in terms of the hockey crowd. I know you're very busy in the summer. And then I kind of wanted to talk to you a little bit about what happens at your place in the off season and sort of the lessons that you've learned along the way and how you've sort of bolstered your business against, you know, the exodus that happens in season. So talk a little bit about what your summer looks like at Crash.
Yeah. You know, and I'll give you an idea of what we've been doing the last couple of years, but we can get into a bit of my evolution of what I learned through my own mistakes and what I've learned in the cycles of the last couple of years, of learn from mistake and then relearn from my mistake again. So more recently, my summer is typically starting in middle to late March, we'll start to get some of the local minor hockey players. Their seasons are over. They've had some time off. They'll get into their off-season training or spring training. Typically, they're doing a decent amount of ice, probably more than they need to March, April, May, because of junior camps and trial camps and spring camps, which seem to be the big business now. And there's groups all over the city in Calgary, but all over North America and all over hockey in general, doing ice in the spring, which isn't necessarily spring hockey. Spring development nowadays, I think, is bigger than ever. One, because there's access to ice. So as a business, hockey seasons are over. The heavy load of the preseason training's over. So now there's access to ice that they haven't had in the past. And guys need to make a buck. There's a lot of hockey. There's players are skating too much in those spring months. So with that, we're trying to build our business and do our job as well on the off ice stuff. And I think we'll typically have, say, 40%, you know, of our group by about April. And then throughout the month of April, we'll build up to about 80% of our number. And then as we hit our pros come back and our older players come back and some of our players who come from, you know, out of town by June, and even some of them may wait till school's over before they become in Calgary. You know, part of that will be sending them to programs and doing satellite training. Well, all of a sudden we hit mid-July, we're in our, you know, 100% of our group, which could range anywhere from 100 to 140 players a day versus, you know, and then in addition, our Lloyd Minster group has a pretty big group. They're sort of in the same range as far as percentage and when they come in. So we do, that's our summer. It's busy. We see players 4 or 5 days a week, sometimes six. Every day is a heavy load. As we get into May, the sessions become longer, typically, except for we do have some players, more so in the last couple of years, playing pro in Europe. So their season actually starts earlier. As we know, it ends earlier. So their training cycles for that pro group will start a bit earlier as well. So their May would actually probably be April or even mid-March. They're about a month ahead or 6 weeks ahead as far as when they leave and when they go. So there's a little bit of adjustment for that group as well.
Okay, so you're talking about a lot of volume, 140 players in a day, and you know these are all hockey guys who are, you know, with the exception of the European guys, within the same, you know, week or two of training in terms of preparing, and obviously you have different programs going for different ages and all that kind of stuff. So lots to consider there. You can see how the hours get long. You know, even if you have 10 guys an hour. At 140 kids, that's 14 hours of training in a day, right? So if you're doing the math, and so if you're around for that's an exhausting day. Not only do you have those coaching hours, but you have the prep hours as well. And it's one of those where a lot of times, especially if you're just getting started, that all that work is on you, right? So you are the business, you are you're the guy. And I think, you know, from the conversations that we've had, I know you were there at one point. You know, not only were you the guy, you were, you know, watching hockey, watching spring hockey, and creating relationships with coaches, creating relationships with players, and all those things that you have to do to drive a business, and then, you know, sort of creating the business out of that. Now, talk a little bit about what happens. You know, I guess as much as you're comfortable, I think, and I don't know your full business model, to be honest, maybe you could talk a little bit about that, but talk a little bit about what happens, you know, early September, you know, late August, early September, when things start to wind down for the summer.
Yeah, approximately the second week or even, you know, right around the 10th to 15th of every August, we'll start to have the tapering of our junior hockey players as they start to go away. Our out-of-town players typically will go home for a week or so before they head off to camp. Camps start around the 20th of August for a lot of the junior teams, and that's a big chunk of your players in any business. So you're going to see 70% of your players, you know, they're starting to taper away and they're starting to go off to camp. They're starting to get ready for camp. So by the 20th to 28th of August, that whole chunk of players basically is, like you said, a mass exodus. They leave. That's even to a point where it almost gets kind of, everybody gets a little bit affected by it, the empty nesting syndrome. Everybody in from the front desk staff to the therapist, massage and the chiros, and especially anybody who's new in a summer, their first summer, I'll actually sit them down or I'll have a group of remind them that it's going to get like that. Be expecting this. You're going to feel this way because I know that it affected me in the early years, but I also know that every year I have a, I have people that come to me like, I don't feel right. And it's like you got ran over by basically stampeding buffalo for about 16 weeks, and all of a sudden it stops and you can feel the rumbling, but there's nobody stepping on you anymore. And it's a weird spot. Everybody goes through it. For me, it's a little different because the pros will be there till about the 5th or 8th of September still. And then even some of the minor pros that'll be around, they could be around till the end of September. So you still have a little bit going on. But for anybody who's used to being in the gym in the regular hours, they go through it, affects them, and rightfully so. It's crazy to how much when you're in this business and you're in this passion stream that you put into your off season, and then to have it go full bore to full stop, it affects you. It's a normal emotion. So it's some every year I talk to our staff, specifically our new staff, because they're not going to be used to it. And I remind remind the rest of the group, hey, it's going to be like this. I try to distract them a little bit, because otherwise they go through a bit of a, I don't want to use the term depression, but they go through a little bit of depression because of how hard you go. And then all of a sudden to be just full stop war for a lot of people. And they start to kind of feel like they're missing something. And I think that's much of what parents feel like when their kids go off to college and move on. So I think that's a part of the deal. You go, you're 100 miles an hour, then all of a sudden you stop and don't know what to do with yourself. And that's what happens. 100% happens.
Yeah. So what do you do? You know, what do you do with that extra time? What do you do with the extra maybe energy that you have that you're not, that you're not putting into the players and things like that? When we were chatting earlier, you mentioned that your role now is a little bit more of like a mentor and sort of a, maybe a guide or a, somebody who's sort of guiding the business at this point and being there for the younger staff and sort of sharing your experience. So what do you do with that extra time, that extra energy as you get into, October, which is notoriously a very slow month for hockey businesses?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, basically from that September and October. So one thing I do with everybody is I try to get them to get out and do things. And I always say make up, especially in Calgary, we have an unbelievable September. It's usually gorgeous here. And get out, be active, be outside, do some things away from work. Take some time and recharge, because again, at one point you're going to start having to be busy again, and you can't. The one thing I've learned from my own mistakes is you can't just keep going all the time and have both sides of the candle burning. It has met for me in the middle. So I get everybody to kind of like chill out a little bit, relax, but do things that, maybe, and like I said, Calgary's a great time of year. They can get out, they can go outdoors, they can do things, be active, and get away with it, get away from everything. Probably about a week. It's a good idea to kind of disappear and go get about a week off and just like shut down. And we'll take turns, like our staff will take turns when who's gone when, because we still have things going on. But then as soon as you're done that, one of the steps is you need to start thinking about your winter business as soon as possible. And usually prior to that, if you can start thinking in July and August and have some people keying a little bit in on how to drum up and how to get active for the winter, because we're going to have teams. We kind of know who our teams are. Prior to that, we'll get some additional teams as they get closer to September. And I've actually had a bit of an evolution of how we do things. I've been as high as about 28 teams in the winter, 28 teams and 12,000 square feet, basically two gyms. It was heavy. It was a lot of teams. There's a lot of action going on. And what I found was it was not giving the product that we wanted to give, not because we couldn't manage the training, but because when you deal with teams, you're dealing with a lot of different wants and needs. And some of those players and some of those coaches and some of those board members that involved are all in, but some aren't. And when they're not in, it doesn't make your job easy, but it also doesn't make your job satisfying or successful. So what we did is we sort of limited a little, two things I did. One is this winter, this summer, I decided to downsize and change some things. And we can get into that and how I'm, evolution of what I'm kind of seeing things now, but I downsized a little bit and took some space away. I went from about 12,000 square feet to 8,000 square feet. So the facility is still a big spot. It's got a couple less things happening. We got rid of some people that I didn't think were part of the team and the mission. And it was a big play. It was a lot. It took some time, but having the right people around, but also I wanted to downsize the amount of action going through the gym that I would classify as on the verge of becoming babysitting or time taking. And what I wanted to do is have people that coming into the gym that want to be there. And I want to have staff that are all in on the process and that want to grow and be better. And then I also wanted the people, our surrounding and our support people, to be on the same page. Cause I found that in this industry in hockey and in Canada, and I think probably all over the US, people think that hockey is this cash cow and everybody wants to ride on the coattails of that cash cow. And I don't necessarily think that everybody has the right intentions. And so I wanted to really simplify and clarify what our plan was going to be. And that is to try to make an impact, obviously influence the game of hockey and the off-ice side. But also that means that we had to kind of shorten our leash a little bit and make sure we're closer to everything that we do. So that was a big one for me. And it is like, you know, 10 years ago, and even 5 years ago, I mean, teams are a huge business for us. And I went through that whole stage. You talked about, you know, early on, you go and paycheck to paycheck in the winter scramble and to make money doing things for free just to build, you know, build relationships and build trust and credibility. And then I got to a point where the business, and to be quite frank, the economic environment in Alberta was so strong. There's tons of money. We were very, very busy in the winter and were able to do really well. But then it became a little bit of, I think, of a washout in general. And then the economy's changed in Alberta. And now just the change in hockey and the change in some of the things that I've seen with more and more on ice and more skill work all the time, which is great in lots of aspects, but it's taking away from people's focus on the development side. And I think the building blocks in that athlete, and I think in the long run, it's going to circle back. It's going to come back. But I've noticed the last about 3 years, and right now, people are taking, you're seeing a little bit less focus on off ice because there's a lot more on ice options. And in addition to teams, not teams necessarily, but individuals doing stuff, and then teams also doing extra stuff. And, you know, it's part of the deal. I think there's other interests, and that's part of us being around for a long time, but I didn't want to get washed out. I didn't want to be part of just doing it to make money and doing it to be in business. So we made some changes so that we could stick to what I think has been our mission or sort of our value from day one and do it that way.
Nice. And I want to touch on two things there. Number one, you know, I don't know if it was, if it's something you vocalized or not, but by kind of shrinking the business and saying, you know what, we're getting a little bit stretched here and we're not putting out the product that we want to put out. We're not living up to the name that we want to have or the brand that we want to put out there. So by shrinking business and sort of giving up money to keep that quality, I think you only build your business stronger. You only build trust in your business and then maybe even demand at that point. Right. So that sets you up for a lot of other cool things. And I think you're right. I think you're right about the, you know, skill work is becoming sort of a ubiquitous thing. And it used to be, I would say it used to be third place, right? You had, I'd say 5, 10 years ago, you had, you know, the team that you played on was number one, right? So you did the things with that team. The off-ice training was number two. The skill was like the extra skill work, the extra coaches, the extra camps, you know, skill training was what you worked in if you could. But I think you're right in a keep up with the Joneses sort of society. People see others on the ice and getting that extra skill work and maybe even seeing the improvements on the ice. And so they got to jump on board there with that. And so when it's the race to the top is starting younger and younger and younger, and that starts to take in or take up a lot of the crowd that we would be working with. Is that kind of what you've seen?
No, you're absolutely right. And when I thought we had our greatest influence in our community in the game of hockey, I found that we had a lot of younger players in the winter. So a PWH player, that 11, 12 year old, and teaching them how to move correctly and jump and produce and have a body that can handle and withstand the sport and the rigors of the game. And through growing, I found that's so much harder to get that age group in now. One, because there's two sides to that sword. One is because there's so much development options, and that means they're taking not only the time of everybody, but they're also taking a deeper cut into the budget. And then I found there is an effect, and this is completely local or, you know, your environment, your economy, but in Alberta, we had a little bit of recession through the oil and gas, excuse me. And I found that with that, a lot of people that were hockey guys that grew up, they left their sales jobs, and they have hockey backgrounds. They started getting into hockey. There's a million hockey skills coaches out there now. Mm. There's some really great ones that everybody knows about. There's some really good ones that people don't even know about. Excuse me. But I found that there's so many options, and everybody's trying to dig into the pockets and dig into the budgets. People, understandably, they're trying to put a roof over their own head, and they're finding a niche. that it started taking away from the time available as well as the budget available of families, and you're starting to see a little bit less. Do we still have them? Yes, we still have them. The other side of that sword, I think too, and this is, you know, this is a direct shot at myself and some missteps in my leadership. I just think we got so busy with our upper end of our hockey group that we were so stretched that we weren't able to facilitate, and we weren't hustling enough to keep or get those younger groups. Mm-hmm. When you have 20 NHL contracts or 30 NHL contracts in your gym at any given day, it's pretty easy sometimes to forget that that next generation of those 11, 12-year-olds need you too. And so I think that became a bit of an issue that I tried to fix. I think I made some missteps in my leadership. And then also just being stretched as a business, I think that that hurt us a little bit. And that's on me, 100%. And that's something I'm aware of. And to be honest with you, like, I'll just use an example. Like Max Lajoie, the defenseman rookie with the Ottawa Senators right now. I think they say he's from Quebec. He's from Calgary. He grew up in Calgary. And he started training with us. His dad brought him in at like that age. And I remember just telling his dad, I'm like, normally we don't take younger guys. And we didn't. But you know what? We'll do this. I think there's a value to this. I also think though, you know, and I said there's some steps we have to take, and it was awesome. And I mean, he wasn't the shiniest star. He wasn't the shiniest coin in the bag as far as hockey players. I think he was a good player. I mean, he was an unbelievable kid, and you could see his coachability. So having those players, that's Max is now in his rookie season at 20, just turned 21 yesterday. And you know, with the Ottawa Senators, had a great start. And you know, at the end of the day, being able to be part of his story from the start is pretty cool. And we almost missed some steps because we were so busy with the guys a little bit older than him, and then obviously his age group. We have a lot of players over the years that have been drafted or signed players. We almost got caught up as a business and being a little bit too old. Mm-hmm. And sometimes even as a staff and as my role, as sort of identifying everybody's what they're best at or what they're best suited as a strength coach or development coach with my own staff, I ended up having a little bit heavy on staff better fitted to older athletes and more, you know, more prepared athletes than I was. And I started to misstep on the coaches that I had in position for those younger athletes that were suitable, had the right level of patience, had the right personality to fit that. And so that's a tough step. And I see that more now. I mean, I'm a father of two. So my daughter who's 13 is a good volleyball player. So although not hockey, but understanding and a female athlete, which is not our heaviest percentage of our demographic. And then also my 11-year-old son who does play hockey. Kind of understanding kids as much as I think I was always good with kids, but understanding kids more now from a parent's perspective is giving me a different view on, you know, what we can do, and not as a business, but as a influencer. I think that's more important to me. So as an influencer and how to help families or help parents help their kids and help kids get what they want and develop some of those traits and give them some of the base development and athleticism they need, we had to change some things we do. And we've had the last couple of years, I think, better than that.
Cool. Yeah. So, you know, when you've looked at your business as almost entirely a youth training business, take me back 10 years to when you first, obviously you're going to notice that September, that early September difference right away. So take me back about 10 years, I don't know, 10, 15 years even, and talk about what conversations you've had or what decisions you made and how you created success in your business in the winter months.
Yeah. So as we kind of got off track for me a little bit, and I'll do that. So I apologize, but it's really easy to focus on a summer, and you'll see some businesses that do off season training. They'll rent a curling rink and they'll rent the space and then they'll put everything into storage and they'll shut down and do part-time training or kind of jumping around, not having. I made a decision way back, I think around 2004, 2005, that we needed to support and be there and service our clients that weren't going away. So we needed to be available for them in the winter. I also learned from my first facility that actually went under my second summer at the end of August, they hadn't paid their bills and the bailiff came and shut them down and basically said, hey, you got an hour. I'll give you an hour to get your stuff done and get your stuff out. But I'm shutting doors on these guys. I haven't paid their bills, blah, blah. Okay. So that was a lesson learned. And what I took from that was I didn't ever want to have my fate in the hands of somebody else. So I made a decision to have full control of my own facility. I knew when the bills were being paid. I knew when the bills weren't being paid. I knew when the lights were off and weren't off. I didn't ever want to be where I wasn't in the know. It was a great lesson for me. It was also a tough lesson for me. It worked out well. We jumped around. I got six guys, some ECAC players who started a bit later than typical college players, and a couple Princeton, Dartmouth players, and a couple pros before they were really breaking out. Mike Green, who's now in Detroit with one of them. Trying to think who else. A couple other players that played a little bit in the NHL. And so on, Nick Johnson, who bounced around Pittsburgh and Boston and Minnesota and off to Europe. A couple other players. So it was a lesson for me getting through a couple weeks of those guys going from gym to gym and then not having a facility to work out in the winter. I ended up using, you know, a community gym for a little bit of stuff that I did. Through that winter, I prepared for that spring to open up my first facility that I actually opened up. And that was my moment where you're like, you know what, when you open up a facility, and I say this to everybody all the time, like, by all means, do it if you want. But remember, at 11 o'clock at night till 6 in the morning, when nobody wants to train, nobody wants to be paying to be there, you're still paying rent. You're still paying to heat it. You're still paying the rent portion of that. You're still paying your insurance for that. And so part of it is, not only do you have in the winter, you have shortened billable hours. So if you're talking about your billable hours, you really have before school and after school for a lot of your athlete base. Along with that, you have less days. So Friday, Saturday, and Sunday are typically tough days to get hockey teams or players in because they're playing, because there is more time for them to go to their, you know, play games, practice, there's more availability ice. You have everybody's going to be playing games or practicing on typically at least two of those 3 days, from novice all the way to midget and minor hockey as well. Monday through Thursday, really, you only have, if you're lucky enough to have business before school, 6 o'clock till about 8 a.m., great. We have a team that comes in twice a week, 6:30 to 7:30. Then they go off to school. It's awesome. But we also, you're working from sometime around 4 o'clock till about 8 or 9 max. That's your window of most of your training. Yes, you'll have some personal training clients. Yes, you'll have some adult training. You might even have some athletes who have some midget age athletes or junior who have a little bit of spare blocks or lighter schedules. They might come in at 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock. There's the opportunity for that. If you're lucky enough to be part of a school program or an academy, you might get that type of business. That's become a big part of it. And that's all I could talk about a bit, how that's affected business, because there's more and more academies all over, especially in Canada, kind of going the U.S. hockey route where you have the schools and the hockey programs more connected. That's becoming very large. And now all of a sudden, kids that might've been coming to you for training on their own are now in academies. So now everything's under the influence of that academy, or they're busy with more stuff. So that's an effector for us. And then so you have a small window to make business in the winter in hockey or in any sport, really, when it comes to the school year. And so in September, and I always say this, in July we need to start thinking about our winter, and in September we take a little bit of time off. I have all my staff take at least a week and really reset and recharge. Always recommend, like, get into reading a book, go read some people's stuff, go come on, check out your podcast, go on online, go read some Mike Boyle stuff, whatever you can get your mind into that's away from our world a little bit. I always say, go do that and pick at least a couple articles that have nothing to do with hockey. Get away from hockey, because I think that's a big one for staff when you're going hockey all year round. And we do have other stuff, but when you're going hockey, especially in the off season, you need to take away from it and get away from it. And then what we do is, our job is to hustle. And the harder we hustle in September, middle of September, to get our teams going, the better chance that we have teams in October coming in. If we can get them starting a little bit earlier and understanding the value of training as soon as we can as they build their teams. Because a lot of coaches are like, oh, I got to wait till we have our team. We're really busy in September. But then their detraining effect of those 30 days, maybe 40 days where kids haven't trained. Because a lot of, say, a midget AAA team, every player on that team has gone off to a junior camp. So they've been gone from training since about the 15th or 18th of August. They get cut maybe in the beginning of September. They move back to their midget AAA program or midget AA program. All of a sudden, if that coach doesn't get going, the bulk of that team, 19 players, all they've done is skate since the middle of August. They haven't trained. They're starting to lose mobility. They're not as strong. And then that'll really show, I think, and as October and November come into play. And I think if teams are more proactive, and that's part of our job and our industry, is to help educate coaches and teams and families and parents and boards, hey, get back in the gym. Let's work on things. Let's get you going so that in November, when everybody else is losing a step, you're still got your step in. And I think that's a big one. And then the harder we work to build, and this is as a business, but to keep players going through December, because December is a really distracting time of year with the Christmas holidays, that's going to be a big influence on how that player or those teams are in playoffs. So really end of January through middle of February on.
So you're using the kind of the idea of continuity to go back to the, you know, training continuity. Like you can work as hard as you want in the summer, but if you take, like you said, 40, 45 days off, you know, you're going to see some backsliding a little bit there. And not to say that it totally takes away from the summer, but I think that's important to talk about with coaches who maybe know it, but don't really have a sense of urgency about getting team in. So that's cool. The idea of continuity and sort of planting some urgency in the coach's head about getting their team to come in and continue working hard. I think the other thing that we see here is a lot of times the budgets are set in July for teams that, you know, tryouts, let's like in our local, association here, that the tryouts are beginning of June, right? So you know who's on your team. The budgets are being set through July. And if you're not talking to teams at that point, or if teams don't have the idea that they're going to come in, then you approach a team in September here and they say, oh, well, that'd be great, but you know, we didn't really talk about that in our budget and we feel like we've already stretched and all this kind of stuff. So the preparation for the winter absolutely begins at the beginning of the summer, which is another challenge because, right, that's when you get into your heaviest training, right? So that even compounds the work in the summer even more.
100%. And that's one of the more important things, I think, for my business is how well I'm managed behind the scenes, not day to day, but the steps ahead, and how well my support staff follows up and we the things that we do. Because I'll typically have a manager into that position, and one of their jobs is to kind of obviously keep the day to day on the ship and keep me updated on stuff so that I know what's going on, but also to start being proactive in the steps and the communication and sort of the knowledge and research of what's going on, so that when we get to the, I mean, in reality, it's you're almost a, you have to be a season ahead. So in the wintertime, you got to be thinking about your spring business, and in the spring, you're obviously very focused on your off season business. So you're May, June, kind of on off season, but in the off season, and that, which is, as you said, you're swamped, you're 100 miles an hour and have a million things going on. You need to be focusing on the winter. If you're not, you're always going to be a step behind. And so for a lot of businesses, I mean, you have to have a good business manager that can handle that stuff. And for, in my role in particular, I need someone to kind of keep me on track or to follow up with the things that I can't do. Cause I am still on the gym floor and I try to be there as much as I can. And, you know, not only with the groups that I lead training with and coach with, but also the groups that I have in the gym that I'm not their lead coach, but I want to be, I'm programming for them. I'm a support coach. I'm, you know, with young coaches, I like to kind of watch how they coach and continue to grow them so that that influences them, but their influence is greater with the athletes that they see. So I'm spending a lot of time with my coaches and best that I can and being part of that. So I end up really easily, I end up losing track of time in the summer. Mm-hmm. And that's something as I'm getting older, because I, as much as I hate to admit it, now I'm getting to that point now where I become busier with my family growing and I am not 28 anymore. So I actually tabbed the old 40 this year and I came to realization amongst a few other things that influence that I have to be more focused and organized to help others. And I have to be better than I ever have now. I'm at that point now that I have to be better than I ever have. I can't live off my energy and my stubbornness and my youthfulness anymore. Those days are over.
Well, and it sounds like you've got a team in place and you're really fortunate in that, you know, you have people on board who can help you out with that and people that you can help lead and people who are going to take over and do good work for you while you're there. I think I know of businesses who have shut down because, you know, maybe you're an excellent coach. Maybe you are, you know, an amazing practitioner. You know your stuff forward and backwards and hockey training is your thing. But if you can't lead a team and you can't bring in the right people that sort of share that vision or complement that vision even, then, you know, you find yourself in that pit, right? Or in the highs and lows, right? And I've seen businesses shut down like that.
We spoke about that at the start too, before we got on the air here, and you asked me kind of what my role was, and that's probably a good time. You know, at the end, maybe originally I was the owner and I was the head strength coach. And that was probably my role and like my title, whatever BS title I got at the time, president, whatever, that's what my role was. And maybe that's the same title on my business card somewhere. I don't even know. So they can go down the garbage in the drain. They don't mean anything. But in all reality, especially in today with the changes in society, and we talk about entitled athletes and we talk about the changes in the generational changes in people, it also includes how we work with others and how, if you are the sort of the mainstay or the face of a company, the leader, the president, the boss, whatever, it's changing how we do things. And there was a time when I was 100% the boss. I was in full control of everything. And what I've learned now is just like the way that we coach athletes and how they are more in need of the whys than they are the whats than ever. Understandably, they're smarter, they're more educated, they're given more than they ever have, you know, in the past, where that's just how they've learned over the years and that's how they respond. It's the same thing with our coaches now. So if you get coaches coming out of their undergrad or their graduate degrees programs, or anywhere from 21 to 24, 25 years old, they've grown up as athletes. Typically, they've grown up as youth in a different generation than, say, myself. And what I'm finding now more than ever is that my job is to help empower them. I need to educate them. I need to direct them. And I think my role now is mentor. So my leadership is different now than it was in 2004 or 2003 when I started kind of doing this, when I was a one-man show. And then I became, I think by my 2004, by the end of it, I think we had four of us. And I've been as high as like 16 staff in Calgary at one time. So in a busy season. So things have changed, maybe more than that, maybe 20 with some of our support staff. And I found that now, and that's really what my role has become, is I do some training, but even the way that I train now and I have other coaches with me is I'm working along them and with them, and we all have different strengths. So we bring in, I have a chiropractor, Dr. James Warner, who's a great strength coach, great young chiropractor. He actually interned under our buddy Matt Shaw at Denver, so obviously came from that great background as well. He's kind of been all over. And so, he's going to have some different strengths in the way that he does things than myself and my background or our other coaches. So we get to certain aspects, and it might be a guy that I always train, whether it's Jordan Everly or Mike Green or Chad John, whoever it is. And at certain points in the summer, I'm like, no, you're with James right now. I'm in the gym. I'm going to handle these couple guys today or this week. This aspect is best suited with him and with you. And that's reality. I handle the programming, but I also want our coaches to adjust and believe, and we make changes based on what we're seeing and how assessments occur and how things are happening. And so that wasn't happening for me 10 years ago. 10 years ago, I was in full control of every aspect, and I really wasn't a tyrant, but I really was a boss leader and driving it a bit. And now I think I'm a director. I'm directing things, and I'm finding the best fits. And we even talked about like partnering up and how you have these business relationships. It's no different than the skills coaches I work with, and trying to find, certain guys need certain aspects in skating or skill work done, or the goalies needs, I'm trying to find relationships. Like, okay, this is the best skills work. Steve Stradacny does the right stuff for Jordan Everly and Mike Green and among a whole bunch of others. But maybe Pat Elmick, who's another great skills guy here in Calgary, hockey development guy, he is the best guy for this group of or couple or this individual, what he does. So that's become sort of my role. Yes, I'm hands on in the gym, but I'm also jumping on the ice. I'm trying to be able to connect what we're doing with our different coaches on and off ice. I'm trying to ensure that our coaches are developing and they're on base. I'm trying to, and that's sort of how my roles change. And I think that's part of, I can't just go to my 22-year-old University of Calgary graduate and go, hey, you need to do this. This is how it's going to be. They're not wired that way anymore. No one is wired to be told and follow through. You don't get that same. But what you do is, I think you engage them and you empower them and you give them very clear direction. And then I think that my job is to follow up and ask, and help them. I ask them why, and the same way they would ask me why. Why are we doing this? Okay, that's good. I think that's where my role has changed and how handling staff has changed in the last 15 years.
Okay. And that's great. And what it sounds like is, you have a very evolved, well-established business, and you've worked for years to be at the level that you're at now where you can play that role. You know, I think there's a lot that maybe don't make it to the point with their business where they can be in that role, or where they feel comfortable letting go, or they don't take the steps early on, you know, and establish that team. So I want to share just a little bit of a different perspective. And this is kind of where I was coached to go. So like I knew nothing about business when I opened a business. I think a lot of practitioners and coaches are that way. You know, it's just a hockey guy that wanted to work with other hockey players. And so, you know, early on we had teams, we had players, we had all that stuff, and started to see the downtime in the winter, and weren't really in a facility that allowed us to take advantage of winter training. So I'm in a rink now. So now the winter is high time for us. So what I did instead of kind of looking to hockey, I looked to coaching. So I have a business coach. I did some personal training, or I guess personal coaching, with a guy named Vince Gabriel, who I'm now part of his mastermind, and just an awesome group of gym owners. But early on, I was coached kind of toward the adult market, and sort of the stability that the adult market can bring. And now I wouldn't say that we've flipped completely, but we have a very steady, stable population of adults that are on annual memberships that sort of help to even out that crush of the summer and the quiet of the winter. But, you know, so that's another perspective, I think, is keep in mind there are other ways to go. So if you're scrapping and you're fighting for every bit of hockey business that you can get in the winter, keep in mind that it's most likely because that's your passion, that's your experience, those are the guys that you love being around. In my case, I see that as kind of my special advantage, because I don't know what it's like to be overweight. I don't know what it's like to struggle with confidence in terms of, you know, physicality, in terms of how I move, that kind of stuff. So I wouldn't even say that's a great skill set for me. But where we found stability was in the adult market. So while hockey is still my passion for sure, obviously, that's my experience. I know what a season's like. I know what guys are going through in season, what off season training should be like, all of that. But I can apply a lot of those same principles to how we're working with adults now. And that's been one step for me, like being coached and, you know, Vince sort of guiding me that way in growing the adult business, which is kind of a majority of what we're looking to grow right now. A lot of the stuff that we talk about now is about adult fitness and about the adult population. It's evened out the business, and it makes things predictable for us, and it makes, and it's weird because now we're starting to leverage adults to bring the kids in, you know, and vice versa, leveraging the adults to bring the kids in. So we kind of have this cool community where, you know, they're coexisting. A lot of times in the evening and in the winter, the adults don't necessarily love when a smelly group of hockey players comes in. And we're definitely walking a line there in terms of keeping a good experience for everybody. But I just wanted to share that perspective too, is that it may not necessarily be doubling down on your hockey business. I think there's other markets that need help, that are searching for help. And I'm not sure what the adult market is like around you, but for us, it's been something that has evened out, and something that I've really grown to love, because you've heard Coach Boyle before say, you won't know for 15, 20 years if you've had an impact on a kid, but an adult will tell you within a month. So there's a lot of fuel there. There's a lot of success stories that pop up right away with adults that they're willing to tell you about. And so, you know, you get this energy from that, and it sort of fuels you to do the things that you really love to do too. So I wanted to share that perspective just because I think, like you said, there's so much competition in terms of like on ice skill stuff, which people are going to go to in season, right? They're going to look to improve the skills and all of that. So I think it's important to know that there's opportunities outside of hockey too, even if you're quote unquote a hockey guy.
Yeah, and I'll let you in a dirty little secret of crash conditioning. We do have a decent little adult market. We have more than just hockey, and that was really tough for me to let go of that or to extend that brand. I think you kind of touched that where, you know, I was so stuck on trying to build a brand in my early years, and maybe rightfully so. I think it worked well in that fact that I built my brand really strong to hockey. But in the last few years, and we always had a little bit, and you know, it could be. But we have a couple of trainers at work in the morning and the evenings, and it's with small group and individuals and adult training. And we don't do a lot of advertising for it. We're looking to see how we can expand it without affecting, especially the way the gym is laid out now. But we've done a good job of, we've had some long-term adult clients, and it's awesome. And to be honest with you, I even have a group at lunchtime that come in that are former clients of ours. So players and that were training with us in 2006 and seven, there's a couple of brothers, a couple other guys. Now they come in as adults, and ironically, awesome. one was a, you know, he was a rep with Bauer, and now he's working in the player management, player agency business. One is funny, ironically, is the goalie rep for CCM. So he travels around seeing National Hockey League guys and the major junior guys. And then and a couple other guys that are just former clients that are working in Calgary. And actually, to be honest with you, it's probably in my winter. It's something that has really brought a lot of personal satisfaction, I think, as far as like seeing those guys succeed as men when you knew them as boys, and then having a relationship with those guys who understood, you know, especially in those days, I was extremely hard on people. I was pushing it a little bit, and they joke about it and go, hey, you helped us get to where we probably wouldn't have got otherwise. And to be able to, you know, the odd time they cross paths a young hockey player and they tell them stories. You know, it's huge for me when even in the summer when Jordan Everly talks about how tough I was on him at 14, 15 years old and how that helped him. When he says that and there's kids in the gym kind of eyes wide open going, oh, you know, I get it. Because it's so tough to really lean on kids now and challenge them because they're not used to that. But to have somebody that they look up to go, yeah, you know, it helped me where I needed to be and this is why. But so they go back and have these adults in the gym and it's great. I mean, there's something about the energy they bring and the respect, incredible. And I think the respect to the gym, and it's such a neat, it's been a really different world for me in the last couple of years to see that. And then I really like it. We also have expanded. We have a partnership with a baseball group. So we do the training. My staff does a training for the baseball academy here, Diamond Dogs Baseball and the National Sports Academy. So we do some baseball, and we're working with the lacrosse group now as well. So we have expanded outside of hockey, which if you were to ask me 7 years ago, I'd have been like, it was either going to be a secret I wouldn't talk about, or it was going to be, you know, it wasn't happening. So in the last couple of years, I've been able to go, you know, we've done a good job with our hockey brand, but let's expand it. And part of that other great thing about that is by not overloading and crushing with hockey, we're able to fit our off season with the right cycles and age groups. And we're not overloaded with one demographic of hockey player. We're not overloaded with a whole bunch of young players that get, you know, that maybe make it hard to have older athletes in, or vice versa. So the different seasons allow for us to not have to really be overloaded just to make business. And I think it's been really good that way too. And the adults bring, they only bring a lot of good components and a great component. I mean, right now in the gym, when we switched over, I was going to go in the gym and have the background of the gym going on. But there's a couple, it's actually one of our private training clients who happens to be one of Canada's top country music artists. So I didn't want to, without talking, I didn't want to put him on for that. So I ended up just coming back in the office here. But I was just going to throw it on a plow box and throw a chair back there and let the gym be the back note just while it's going on. But I didn't think that was fair to him. But yeah, no, it's great. We typically don't have a whole lot in the daytime, but what we do, we have to hustle for it. That's the reality of this business. You're in a rink. I've been in talks with a couple of arenas the last 3 or 4 years about my next move being into an arena. And there's been some opportunity. I'm just looking for the right fit and to make sure it works. And I mean, that's an ideal world, you know, especially with not just your off season, but just in general, just some business reasons behind that work really well. But in the off season, I'd be able to cross over from the gym to the ice and do more stuff, I think is the direction that I would like to go. I'd like to see us translate what we do in our movement patterns and training to the needs of the athlete that we're working with, the hockey players. we're able to do it here. We have batting cages and we have stuff for baseball. So it actually works really well for baseball on the dry patch in the gym, but we don't have a rink here, but we will have our shooting stuff set up in the summer again. And we're able to do quite a bit of stuff. I'm not going to use the term sport specific. We're able to translate some of the things we're talking about and doing and put them together. And I think that helps with buy-in, but I also think that helps with business as well.
Yeah, for sure. And so I think the biggest takeaway here, and you know, this whole conversation has kind of the young business owner in mind, yourself and myself included, you know, because we're always learning, like you said, always learning lessons, always evolving. I'm in a very good group of gym owners now. We're, I mean, eyes on more like general population fitness, but it's very good for me. I had a really tough time getting out of sports performance, and I think it was an ego thing for sure. But the rewards have been so much that, you know, I wouldn't have it any other way right now. But I think this whole conversation was sort of geared towards the younger strength coach, or any strength coach that's looking to kind of improve their status or improve their marketability, so that they can open up a place of their own and maybe start thinking about some different routes to go, because you have to be in a very special situation to open a hockey specific place or, you know, what you call, like what you say, I'm going to work with hockey guys. You have to be in a very special situation to make that work right off the bat. So keeping your mind open to other things, I think, is really important for you as a coach to improve your coaching skills and to improve, you know, your, you know, ability to run a business or open a business. And I'll tell you what, and you know this too, coaching adults is a lot different than coaching kids. So just having the skill set to do both makes you much more marketable, much more valuable. And I think in the long run gives you a better chance at making it and being successful in the fitness and the training world. So I think that's why I wanted to have the conversation.
Yeah. I think that a lot of coaches need to realize too, and I think a lot of young kind of aspiring business coaches or business owners in this world, the financial burden of running your own business can be difficult. And if you're able to offset some of your quiet time by generating revenue with things that are outside of, say, your number one passion, it will allow you to do a better job when you are focusing on your passion. It's gonna help fuel it. I mean, as a business financially, but also I also think that it takes you away from doing too much for little. There is a better revenue path in adult training than there would be in youth training. There's a chance to make more money. There's less, I don't want to call it lower maintenance. It can be a bit more lower maintenance than training athletes. But also, so it allows you to make some money. The hours are typically a little bit different. So it allows you to work within different billable hours. So that helps. And when you're able to deload some of the stress as a business owner that you have, I think you do a better job as a coach, especially in your early years when you're wearing many hats. And I mean, we've both been there where we wear every hat from the front desk to the cleaner to the strength coach to the cook to the business owner. And I think that's a difficult one. I've obviously worn all the hats. That's a definite thing. And I've even more recently been kind of bouncing around which hat is mine anymore. So, so that's part of the deal, I guess, too, in the stages that I'm at now. And so I think that is part of the deal. But I think going back, if I could go back in time, be able to, and I think we did a little, we've always done a little bit secretly, a little dark secret. We didn't just do hockey players. Right. And not every hockey player in the gym was an NHLer.
Right.
You know, everybody thinks that's, you know, the not for everyone means that you have to be the elite of the elite. No, the not for everyone really just means you have to be willing to work and you have to be open to being coached and you have to be open to being bettering yourself. And, but I think that sometimes we got ourselves into a little bit of a corner where we forget that. I think the being able to expand and as a business owner makes a big difference. And you get outside of your realm. And as a coach, you learn from the different personalities and people and the things that you have to work around from, you know, previous histories, medical histories, injuries, and so on. And what they can and can't do, you will see it again. As you'll see stuff in an adult that you may see in a young, you know, elite athlete, and you'll start to kind of connect the dots as a coach as well.
Sure. Yeah. And it, you know, I think a lot of people find themselves in this situation, even if you are not, you know, if you're with a team, like, let's say you're a collegiate coach or, even an NHL coach. I mean, a lot of NHL guys have a business on the side as well, you know? So it's not just for the young strength coaches, not just for the, private sector guys. This is learning and planning and being in a position where you can do this for people for the rest of your life, if it's your passion, you know? So yeah, I think the conversation is hopefully people at every age, at every stop in their career can learn something from this. But I think the biggest take home is you know, be open to other kinds of training and other, you know, if you're going to be in business, if you're going to be creating a, you know, creating a name for yourself or whatever it might be, you know, there's value in doing other things. But I think what you said is important too. It's being a season ahead, right? Being a full 6 months ahead of where it is in the training season. So, I don't know. I think it sounds like we have, kind of different approaches, which I think is good. And, hopefully there are some lessons here to take home, or you get a little bit, like one little tip or one little, you know, idea to try. And kind of, that's why I wanted to reach out and chat. So, but I'm going to wrap up here, Crash, cause, you know, I want to try to keep these to a car ride or to a commute length. Yeah. But this has been awesome. I think we could delve into the business stuff even more someday. But for now, this gives people enough to chew on, and I really appreciate your time.
Awesome, Brian. Thank you very much.
All right, that's going to wrap up episode 74 of the Hockey Strength Podcast. Thank you so much to our guest, Doug Crashley, for hanging out for a while. And that one actually... we had to take up two recordings there because we sort of timed out of the first one. But so thankful for, you know, just sharing the time with us and sharing a lot of insight. Hopefully you guys took a lot away from that conversation. I know I did. It's a privilege to have conversations like that. So we look forward to talking to you more down the road. My name is Brian Sipitz. And until next time, be sure to train smart. And check out HockeyStrengthAndConditioning.com, the world's greatest resource for training hockey players. We'll talk to you soon.